And for today, as we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, if you could also remain standing for a moment of silent reflection for the family of Kyle Richmond.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mrs. Hagenbusch, if you could call the roll, please.
Mr. Sams?
Present.
Mr. Knight?
Present.
Mrs. Bennett?
Present.
Mr. Yule?
Present.
Mrs. Webble?
Present.
We have the building update, the fieldhouse discussion.
I provided the same drawings that came in over email before the weekend. And really, I guess I kind of opened it up to you guys for questions on what was in email. I do believe just a time frame between now and next Monday's board meeting, we should probably have some sort of decision by the boards so that we can continue to move forward with the design and the building of whatever structure that that's going to look like. I guess I could briefly just go through what you're looking at. The first page is really the site plan where this thing would sit on the site. The second page is the overall concept, that we're calling Concept 7, which is the last one that we kind of did, and taking comments from the last board meeting we were at. MKC has designed in some locker room space, as well as the future career tech space. And right now, looking at Concept 7, that would really just be, there would be no plumbing, it would be still gravel, really completely raw for the future. The one advantage to actually building that shell is if you look at the third page, it allows us to take the mechanical off of the mezzanine, which just frees up that to be more usable space. Basically, what they would do is put the structure in to hold that mechanical space up, and then underneath it would just be, kind of open space to be designed later as part of that possible career tech program. But you can see they've kind of outlined what a batting cage would be. That's about the size of that. So just as an ex-baseball player slash coach, you could actually put two mounds up there. It'd be a nice usable space. So that was the Concept 7 that was adding the locker rooms as well as building the shell for if we want to add, the hot topic is career tech space in there. It gives us the ability to go do that without completely having to build all of, and Matt Collier's here, he can probably speak a little bit more about the efficiencies of building. You're welcome. There, obviously, just common sense dictates, there'll be a cost savings of building that shell now compared to building in the future. Just bringing contractors back on site, their remobilization cost, as well as when you're buying the metal, the materials, you're going to get a little bit better deal by buying the whole package at once. Exactly how much that is, I think it's really hard to put a dollar value on. But if you decide that space that pretty certain we're going to use in the future, in terms of long term, we're going to spend less money on it. obviously we need to make a decision of, do we have the money? The next page shows really if we were going to build the whole space right now, and what MKC did is really just went off the OFCC manual. So this is the one that shows like some career tech space, offices, things like that. And that would be, you know, it really, like I said, it's just career tech. Here's the square footage, the areas they kind of recommend. So once again, we're not saying we're building it that way. It just kind of gives us an idea of possibly what that space could look like if we were to build it out. And then the last page, actually, if we were to do that, this is kind of an old one that shows, and the reason I included that is if we just build the field house without the shell, you can see the space that the mechanical room is going to take up on that mezzanine area. So I guess at this point, open up for questions from the board.
The email that you'd sent us, you have 1 through 4. And you're starting out with a cost of 1.2, and then you end up with 2.2. Do you have your email there?
I don't have it printed out.
Okay.
But those are the numbers.
So, are you just do you want me to show it to you so I don't throw you off too much?
No, I can.
You got it down?
Yeah.
Okay. So, to add locker rooms is 1.5. I'm confused with that.
Correct. It's roughly speaking, and once again, Matt Collier, really, the numbers came from C.T. Taylor. So as we talk about it, he can probably expand on this, but adding the locker room space and the square footage for those was about roughly $300,000.
And that's to move phys ed.
Well, I don't know that we've determined phys ed would move.
That was the idea, though.
Correct. And what that does, though, is that it creates
the foot traffic
a building that's much more usable for both academics and other groups. So the idea was, let's see what that's going to look like. And according to C.T. Taylor, that's about $300,000.
And it potentially creates the opportunity to move the weight room from inside the new building to this facility, which then creates a very large space in the new building if we wanted to do something with career tech in there or something else.
Yeah, and the uptick in the price there is the added square footage and basically the density of the square footage being the locker rooms and adding additional bathrooms in there as well.
And what's how much is that square footage?
It added, this design with moving the weight room added 2,550 square foot of additional building square footage in the base shell, into the base building.
So that's 300,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then you jump up to the third option of 1.855 to add the shell.
Yeah, that basically gets you the same upgrade in the locker room space, the same adding square footage, and then adding the shell to it as well. For the vocational space.
Okay, so you're getting the 2,500 with your locker rooms, and then the square footage. I'm sorry, of the shell.
Square footage on the shell is just under 6,000 square feet.
Total space or additional space?
Let's do it this way. The original base concept was a little over 11,000 square feet. When you add the new concept 7 with moving the weight room and everything out there, that goes to you're basically 13,700 square feet. And then when you add the shell space to it, you're about 19,600 square feet.
Just doing the math very quickly, it's about, like Matt said, the shell is about 6,000.
Okay. So you're right on. So 2,550 plus 6,000. And then the 2.22, that's all in.
Correct. Yeah, that's all in, that's building the whole thing, all that space, you know, designed for a program.
Ready for a program that potentially could be...
You don't know yet. So, yeah, if you vote exactly what's on that, which is Jake's page four, with the walls, the classrooms, the office, the food deck lab, the outside storage, the pool crib, if you built that all out just like that, that's basically the two and some change numbers. And again, I don't know that you would do that, you need to define your space, but give you a sense on dollar-wise what that would look like.
What is the square footage again of the high school weight room? If we move the high school weight room to here, that would free up space for possible career tech programs?
Yes, do you have that square footage?
I forget what...
It was 48 by 40, if I'm not mistaken.
Wasn't it like 1900 square
feet? Yeah, I remember 1900. That's the number that was...
The existing?
No, at the new building.
The new building.
So as you bring it over, it creates 1900 square foot inside the building for space.
The new high school.
Does this say?
The only difference was the height, right? I mean, the height of that ceiling is gonna be a lot shorter than...
Yeah, it won't be as high as the space that would be in the fieldhouse.
I guess I'm just wondering, I mean, if we're gonna free up space in the high school, I like the idea of creating the shell. I'm just not sure that we have the extra almost $1 million to build this shell.
Well, the shell, building the shell is not the extra $1 million.
Finish.
It was...
$600.
Yeah.
The $600,000.
I thought it was, did I write down the wrong number?
It's three.
The shell has the locker rooms with it.
Yeah.
Correct.
One way to look at it.
Right, it's 1.8. The money that we're getting back from the building project is nine, so it's almost... That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's close to...
It's almost another $1 million that we have to put into the project. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, and I was thinking you meant an additional million.
No, I'm just thinking of money that we have to come up with on our own for this. And although I like that idea, I'm not sure that we have that in our budget. If we move the weight room from the new high school, that frees up some space that we can use for a career tech program.
Yes, it does.
I just don't want us building more than what we can fill.
Well, and the other thing, we would certainly fill it.
And not afford it, I guess.
The other thing that we're going to be in need of is space for our own maintenance equipment and so forth. That's the other thing we talked about, is if we didn't put a career program in there immediately and use some of that space, if we just had the shell, because we eliminated some maintenance space when we did the stadium.
Okay, so if we don't build this shell, where are we putting our maintenance equipment? I mean,
well,
we have
we're
to
using
have something.
Some of the building where the masonry program is to put maintenance equipment. That's really the area that we have.
What
is that? I mean, is that sufficient?
Well, you know, I'll let you address that,
Mr. Carmody,
because one of the things that's going to happen, we're going to need extra equipment.
Yeah,
that's part of the issue.
Yeah, we're going to be purchasing some additional equipment for the new facility, snow removal, mowing, things like that. That we do have a path to get back and forth, but some of it's going to be specialized for that campus, and having a little space over there to have some of that stored, you know, it's going to reduce the travel time of getting equipment back and forth, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it adds up in time after a while.
Why can't we have the masonry build a block building and the carpentry in Wadsworth truss it and sheet it and roof it? I see that would be the cheapest way to build a maintenance shed. That would be,
and we have definitely,
for the cost of material, basically.
Yeah, we've definitely had, you know, discussions about that, but until we, you know, get the plan of this whole campus done, we would look at the option of where those things go.
Well, we all agreed. My understanding was to build a field house at $1.2 million, so it's not What number you, 900,000, I'm sorry, you said nine, what did you say, 600?
When you're talking about building a field house at 1.2 million, that's about an additional 300,000 coming out of the district's money.
Yep.
Now we're looking at 1.8, mm-hmm. that's almost an addition, almost $1 million coming mm-hmm. out of the district's money. That's a big difference. That's the point that I'm making yeah. with that. Yes, I did agree to building a field house. I just want to make sure that we're comfortable with what we're doing, and I'm not sure that I am with that amount of money.
I understand. But the money that we've already agreed to was 1.2, was 1.25.
That is correct.
No matter what, we're...
That's $600,000 more.
I understand, but I just don't want there to be a misconception, because the money that this board has unanimously agreed upon was 1.25 million to build a field house. But I...
Did we vote?
It was just an agreement,
but we yeah. had voted on nothing.
Yeah. yeah, there was not.
Stephanie, is the 900,000 in here anywhere or not?
No, the numbers that I sent you is strictly if we had to make all the payments out of our PI fund to front the money till we received it. Remember yeah, how we were looking at
yeah.
that?
Mm-hmm. But I wasn't sure.
So I just kept that same concept going. So when the money would be released, which. Bill said we could get some of it. Do you remember the date you were with me when we talked to him? I don't think he gave us
earlier than later.
It was kind of his response.
Well, yeah,
so you could funnel, I'd say maybe partway through that, you could funnel 450 in and then do the additional towards
the
end.
You know, if it's coming, that's not a big deal. But I just didn't know if it was in there yet or not. So I didn't think so because I remember.
Yeah, I didn't take it out. And the other thing I left in there is the high school renovation, the 200,000, which we're pretty sure is going to be significantly less than that. But we don't have the absolute final approval from the state that we can use all of our food service money for that. Mm-hmm. Basically, the last email Jake sent to them said, if we don't hear back from you, we're going to assume this is okay and we've not heard anything. But we're still, I'm not comfortable saying, yep, that's it.
Yeah.
Till we get more confirmation. So that 200,000 could go away also.
All of it? Okay. We haven't spent any of it.
Yeah.
All food service money. Okay.
The only thing we may have to pay for is the percentage that's in the actual student dining area based on the percent of the day that other kids use it.
Okay.
Right.
The thing that's nice about the plan with the weight room and the future career tech spaces, we can always do that down the road if things change or, you know, correct me. I mean, that's the beauty of that future thing, is that it's always, that would be an easy thing to do down the road when things change.
Yeah, I mean, if you build, you have two ways to look at that. Yes, you could always build the future shell at a later date. Jake referred to it, it's going to be a little bit more percentage. I mean, I would guess 15 to 25% more to do that shell than if you do it now with the building.
It would be 25% more?
15 to 25. But if you build that shell with it now, yeah, you have, you know, whenever you when you could build up part of it, you could build up all of it, then use it for storage, you have lots of potential for that. And then if you get a vocational program, you build to suit what exactly you're getting.
The other thing that would happen, correct me if I'm wrong here, Matt, if we didn't build the shell now and you want to do that later, you would lose the efficiency of the space moving the...
You would lose the ability to put a mezzanine out in that shell, and
right.
that mezzanine that's in the field house area, which is the last page of the drawing, you can see that the mechanical room, the technology, would have to go on that mezzanine in there. So you're losing, I don't know, 20%? 25% of that space?
Listening to everybody and, you know, everything comes down to finances, and unfortunately, you know, schools seem to always typically struggle with it. I look at this space as we're able to accomplish many things when we agreed on the field house itself. Additional space, cheaper, you know, opportunity now to build it cheaper than later. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't be able to do it. At the end of the day, it's all an investment into the students, no matter what we do, I feel. I mean, I think the athletic complex, being a field house, we're going to get a lot of investment out of it. Our kids are going to utilize it. Looking at the shell, I mean, I personally, it is a lot of money, and I agree with what Jennifer is, you know, we need to make the right decision here. If we financially can afford this and we're comfortable, because, I mean, this also hinges on a renewal of a PI levy, which hopefully we can gain the support since it's just a renewal. But, you know, I look at this as an investment. So $900,000 is the number above and beyond what, you know, what we're, I guess, getting covered from our savings for a shell. If it can be utilized, my whole fear in this, and I said it last time, is if we can do it and we can afford it, I think we should. I would support moving forward with this because I feel that when we open up the weight room, if we do this option, we open up the weight room, that's going to get filled elsewhere. With some, and then eventually we're going to have nothing.
That's
my fear. I'm talking the athletic. The field house with the weight room, the locker rooms, and a shell.
Okay, yeah.
Because I feel if we don't do it now, I'm all in support if we're 100% that we can fill the space at the high school with a career tech. Because I think we all agree that we want something for our students as far as a career tech. I just fear that if we don't place that right away, that we're going to lose space and we're going to have nothing. And then 3 years down the road or wherever it may be, we're going to be struggling to find space and we may not get it. It's my personal opinion, and I don't want to, you know, if we can afford it, I think this shell is worth taking a serious look at. And I'm not trying to disagree or agree, but I think we all know that it's tough to come up with money.
The weight room's coming over anyway, right? I mean, on all
right, but what I'm saying is if we move the weight room over and it frees up the space, you know, there was talk about we potentially would throw a wall up in between there and make two more classrooms. That now we have zero space for career tech.
That would be career tech.
Well, no, I thought last time that we talked about this that there could be use for that without being career tech. Like we could use two more classrooms or two more facilities.
Classrooms for career tech.
No. They
There's
talked
teachers
about
that were,
yeah,
exactly.
Teachers.
We build a school that doesn't have enough classrooms. Is that what you're saying?
I'm wasn't there comment that there's some teachers that are out of that could use the space that or maybe sharing or something?
Here's the situation with that.
Right.
If it's not going to be, if we're not moving a weight room to use it for career tech, but we're using it for classrooms, then we need to make sure that that's what we're saying.
Well, and when buildings are built from the Ohio Schools Facilities Commission, square footage is determined by student population. And as that's done, one of the things that you end up with is will we have some teachers maybe in specials or other areas that don't have a designated classroom? Yes, we will, but that's standard. I mean, it's not like that's not to be expected. It's not like we're going to have teachers moving all over the place. You know, so I think the fact that we have some of those situations is not a negative at all. And I don't see a need, and I wasn't aware of that conversation, I don't see a need to designate the space identified as the weight room in the new building to separate that into classrooms.
Well, I think the discussion was because we don't have a plan for a career tech at this point, so it may take some time to get one.
If they're going to make that a classroom, then chances are they're going to stay classrooms.
Well, right. No, that's what I'm trying to say is that's how the discussion started, and it was stated in the meeting that you just don't know. I mean, it could be filled and it could be filled. I mean, if you go back and listen, I promise. I'm not a politician here. But all I'm saying is my whole fear is if we don't designate that as career tech, and I think that's where we struggled, or there was struggle to say, okay, we're just going to have this open space and it's going to stay open until it's career tech. If we don't, we can't say, okay, we have a need for that now, and now career tech has no space. That's my fear.
Well, and I think what you need to do as a board is identify that space, if whatever space it is, because the reality is, it's not unlike your house. If you have space, you fill it, okay? So if you have a space in the new building that the weight room area, that you want to designate for a career tech program, you simply identify it as such, and you don't move anything in there. You know, and I would think that from what I've heard from the discussions with this board over the next few months, those conversations about career tech are just going to get more serious. We have the survey that's going to be going out, and we should be in a decision to make a decision about an addition of a career tech program if we're going to do that. And if that space is needed, then that's where it goes, and you move forward with that.
Well, one of the discussions that we need to have again and is about the property, because that property, that is PI money. Is that correct, Stephanie? You know, so if we could agree on that angle too, that would help us with different projects that we could accomplish.
What property are you talking about?
The property of the stadium in the cornerstone that was the people in Norton were told.
Told what? They were not told we're selling it unless you told them that.
No, no. But they were, no, what they were told, I'll tell you what they were told.
Okay, tell us.
Because I think that everybody heard this, that the stadium was unsafe. In 2013, that they're going to widen the road, and it was unsafe. And if I remember correctly, there was yellow tape put all over it to make a point that it was unsafe. Okay.
Those are the end sections, not the
middle. Okay. Okay. Now, we passed the levy, and now we want to keep it.
Well, but let me clarify that for a second.
There's a lot of people in the community. I'm going to clarify.
Let him finish.
I'm going to clarify something. There's a lot of people in the community feel like they were misled. Were they?
No, they weren't.
No, because let me clarify the situation there. Unsafe as a stadium, not unsafe as a piece of property. We've built a new stadium. So
are we going to tear the whole stadium down?
We're going to take the ends out.
Okay. And the away bleachers, that was the point. We're going to lose the away bleachers.
I'm going to.
That's the point. Well, no.
So that's what you're going to tell us what we're going to do already? I mean, I thought this was a board discussion. You're saying this is what we're going to do?
No, there's nothing different about what I'm saying, Mr. Knight. The reality is that if the board wants to sell property, that is a board decision.
Exactly.
That's not going to be my decision to make. But to say that the property is unsafe as a piece of property is misleading. It's unsafe to use as a stadium, and that's why we moved the stadium.
Okay, now we're going to argue about property versus stadium. I never said property. I said the stadium, the people in Norton were told. Because I remember hearing it, and other people have told me this, that one of the reasons that we had to pass the bond issue for the new school was the widening of the road, the visitor side was coming out, the stadium was unsafe because people were falling through it. You would go to the games and they'd have sections with yellow tape all over it.
We did it at the end of 1 year.
So then there was a fear put out. So the people passed the levy, which was a good thing. So now it's like, well, it's okay.
No, that's not what's being said at all. You're completely...
The only thing I recall that was ever said is that with the widening of Cleveland-Maslin Road, that was going to come into our visitor bleachers section, making that unsafe to put bleachers there, yes. And it was also anticipated that it's going to come up to the side of Cornerstone,
yes.
Again, affecting our playground area.
Yes.
I don't recall there ever being anything said about the property itself being unsafe or that we were going to sell the property. I think there's a distinction there.
Well, like I said, I mean, it's hard to go back in time and know what exactly was said. We can say this was said, that was said. I know that I heard that. I think other people in the community heard that. So
I guess what is the issue now?
I think that we have 10 acres in downtown Norton that has sewer and water that can be developed. And to hold that for an 8th grade football stadium, when we have a stadium everybody wants to play on, it's beautiful.
Well, and just exactly how close do you want the public coming to our existing buildings?
What do you mean by that?
We got a primary, and we'll have a middle school right there. So you want to sell 10 acres, and that's what I'm saying. How close do you want the public coming to our school buildings?
I think they're already going to be close from Arby's to how much? I mean, they're already close. That argument from the football stadium, they're already closer. We're at Arby's. That doesn't even make
10
sense.
10 acres comes when you come in the primary part driveway. If you come in the primary driveway, you go straight over toward the masonry building, and then hang a right and go up against.
It doesn't have to be the. Yeah, we could.
That's 10 acres, Rob. So they're going to be. You're going to walk out of the primary building, across the road. You're going to have a business right there. You're going to have traffic, and you're going to have people.
Well, and you do not have to sell the whole 10 acres.
You just said that, so that's why.
That's what was surveyed off. I'm just saying, you do not have to sell. You can leave a section there that you could plant, you know. You could have a barrier if you choose to do it.
Well, there's, you know, if you're going to talk about selling property and it has to relate to the potential of spending money, then that's privy to the conversation. But, you know, the argument can be there is a McDonald's. There is no fence between McDonald's and
there's
Cornerstone.
A bus garage.
Yeah, there is, but Cornerstone, the buses are right there. I mean,
but you do not have traffic on our property. There's a difference. There's the traffic goes into McDonald's. There's a grassy thing there. You're going to be right there.
No,
and
people
have gas pumps there.
One of the things that I would say is that certainly there has been conversation from time to time about whether or not the Board of Education should entertain thoughts of selling property. And I think that that's, you know, multiple meetings, work session. There's a lot of information that needs to come in to make those decisions. I don't think that the decision on what to do with that property and whether the board decides to sell it at some point has a significant impact on which field house proposal we try to go with, because we're not waiting for that money from the sale of property for the field house. I think that you have to take a look at the field house as it is, with our PI dollars as they are, and make a decision what you want to do with the field house. And at some point, you will have to have that conversation about selling property. There's no question about that. But I don't think we need to make that decision tonight in terms of the field house.
I'm not saying we have to make that tonight, but I think this is a discussion that has been, for whatever reason, has been being prolonged. And I think that we have a situation where after school is out this spring, that property will be available, and we need to have discussions sooner than later on that.
And the board can schedule work sessions and meetings to discuss that property at the discretion of the board.
I certainly agree that, you know, you got to look at the big picture, and, you know, whatever happens with the property, you know, if it's something that we all decide to do, or the majority says, and it's going to add to the PI, that's all great. But I do have a question about the square footage. The 1,900 square feet of the weight room area, this, Jake, you had mentioned in the opening that this was kind of per state spec for career tech, this finished out space.
Correct.
Right. So this career tech lab is 2,874 square feet. So will we be handcuffed with 1,900 square feet at the high school?
It depends on what program.
Yeah.
We don't even have a program, you know.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, though, would they say, well, 1,900 square feet's not enough? I'm just asking, because I don't know.
They don't mandate really the space. This is a guideline, but if we're going to go with, if there's a certain program we have in mind, and we don't have space to accommodate it, then we won't be able to house that program. I don't think anybody would argue that, you know, building this 6,000 square foot gives us a great opportunity to house, I'm not going to say any career tech program, but it gives us a lot more opportunity. I think the decision really is can we afford to do it right now? That's the decision. You know, that's really what, I haven't heard anybody say this is a bad idea. So I think we need to look at, are we willing to spend the money now to put the shell in?
I certainly agree with you that we need to, but is there any way before next board meeting, because that's when you would hope to get a final, is there any way you can get us information from somebody from the state level or whatever that would say, yes, 1,900 square feet. Because here's the thing, we could all agree to not build the shell, and then all of a sudden we go to get a career tech, and it's like, well, you have three options. Well, none of those options are going to do us any good. I just want to be 100% for sure. That's all I'm asking.
I think that's a good idea. I think what we could...
All they require is a classroom.
Yeah, I would suggest talking to Mr. Wright and getting an idea of square footage.
I'm sure there's a guideline of this program requires about this much square footage. And none of them will be specific. I can almost guarantee that it'll be a range. You know, you can work with this program.
And we can see what's in existence that way.
I talked to Mr. Wright about that.
And I will say, too, and one of the things that's just true about the Ohio Schools Facilities Guidelines in terms of creating space, and this is a generalization, so it's not, I'm not saying absolutely it will fit all programs, but most of the time the space designated through the Ohio Schools Facilities Commission is larger than what districts would normally do if they weren't using OSFC money. So my guess would be that that square footage is enough for just about any program. The thing that might scare me the most that way is if there are, what programs might require a higher ceiling.
Is there any way we can get numbers with the money that is going, that we are getting, since the numbers that you provided us didn't have that, and then if the renewal happens, what our outlook is? You following me?
Kevin, are you comfortable with this expense, the 1.8? I know it's putting you on the spot, but
I'm never comfortable spending money. Ask Jake. I won't let him spend money on anything.
That only leaves us $400,000 at the end.
Are you putting the 9 back?
That's with the 9. That's only leaves us 400 at the end. And then if we have, which, how much does that bring in a year?
600,000.
Yeah.
Thank you. I printed it, left it on the printer.
So next year we would have essentially $1 million if it passes, because isn't it next year?
Yes, we have to pass it by the end of 2017, which is why
it
stopped
here.
And if
we don't, we're at 400.
Yeah.
And there's no, I mean, the only other funds that would fill that are
operating dollars. We can use our operating money to pay for stuff like
No, I know, but I'm saying if the PI levy doesn't pass, it's
all we have to
spend
on stuff, you know, projects or broken things, repairs.
And we did not put buses in here. If you remember that from our conversation before, because we thought, well, we could push those off just a little bit on the actual payment of those, and that's not included in this. Or no, I'm sorry, they are.
No buses on that.
Yeah.
It was the second. It was the second fund or the second round of them. So you might be able to put back in the cafeteria renovations at 200,000. So you might end up with 6, which isn't an unreasonable amount as long as our PI levy passes. Because that's what we go out. I mean, that's why we have the PI levy, is to make the improvements.
Middle school / elementary school renovations. The 600 is easily in the budget for the secure entrance as we start to look at playgrounds. I think that 600 is if we were really going to like redo the whole parking area, and we could easily not redo the whole asphalt. I mean, you could do what we call a facelift down there and basically restripe it so that it's, you know, functional for the pattern that we need. So I'm just bringing that up, and that, you know, we said 600, pulling out the PI for that is a very conservative number.
But the problem is we're eventually going to have to do all that anyway. You know what I'm saying? So eventually you may save it this year, but you're going to be putting it in next year, you know?
But that was a conservative number. I think that's,
yeah.
And who knows what that's actually going to be. But we try to err on being conservative with that.
You know, we think about vocational
and nowhere
programs, we have to pay for those. So if we would pick a vocational program that has $300,000 worth of equipment, that comes out of Norton's budget. We don't have that. So we are probably going to be picking a vocational program that is more
book
classroom-like.
Yeah, classroom-like. Because there's a lot of them there, you know.
Yeah.
We have an old stadium, but we don't have that money.
Well, one of the,
I think either way you're going to have, you're going to be spending, either way, I mean, a career tech, I mean, we're going to be spending money. I get what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying, though?
No, I completely get it. I'm just, again, my fear is if we build the shell, we have an opportunity to, we have more options in career tech, and maybe then at that point, that we're not handcuffed in the old weight room if we move the rate, and maybe we can find some other positive avenues to utilize that space for our students as far as whatever it may be. I just, because that'll be finished space on the school, and I think, I, personally, and again, don't nobody take this the wrong way, I think if we build the shell, that it just gives us a lot more opportunity. The only, as I've been thinking through this, and I probably think way too much, but then I look at it as, okay, well, once we decide what we have, now we got to finish it, and that's going to cost money.
I was going to say that. That's another $600,000 to finish it that we don't have accounted for anywhere.
Right. If we move the weight room,
or
which looks like that's kind
any
of what,
supplies.
Then we're going to, then, and if we move the weight room and have the shell, then we have two spaces.
Are the weights included?
Within the building, then we have this one too. And believe me, I don't think it's a bad idea. It's just the money.
I said it was.
The weight equipment? So we're moving what we have here up there.
Correct.
And nobody's going to come and say, hey, we need more weight equipment.
False. We're going from
a 600 square foot weight room to 1900.
We do have a piece of equipment that wouldn't fit.
They could run track.
Okay. Well, I'm just trying to think of other, if there, somebody's coming along with that.
There will always be people that want additional weight equipment. But we went through, what's it been, about 3 years ago?
I know we updated a lot of it.
So that's one of those things that I'm confident that we had, we're in a place where we are sufficient there. You're always, you know what it's like.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get.
I know, they're in line.
For more in any program.
If we are able to pass our PI levy next year, I think we, to build the additional space is doable. We would just have to go on the conservative end like we have done a few years ago when we knew we wanted to purchase property. We just kind of, you know, and hopefully with a new building and newer building here and an updated middle school, there's not as many repairs that need to be done, but that's something that we can't predict one way or the other.
We do have,
you know, one of the biggest expenses we've had, and there's no way to predict it, but one of the biggest expenses we've had has been roof situations, so certainly we're going to have less roof. We've had expenses at grill that have been pretty sensitive that those will go away. But there's no way, this is the thing about those types of expenses. I mean, you can do your best guess, but there's no guarantees on any of that.
It's tough. It's an investment in our kids, but it comes down to dollars.
And then it also, like, equipping it later.
We do have a question.
I was just wanting to clarify, the new field house with the shell, will we also be able to do all of the improvements that we need to the current middle school to make the elementary school?
No.
Okay. That's right. So I just want to make sure that we're not taking anything from that. Mm-hmm.
When you say shell, what's the inside finish look like? Is it just...
It'll look like inside of a field house. It'll be basically up to 8 or 10 feet, metal siding, structural steel, roof, walls. You just won't put a floor in it yet.
So a floor costs $600,000?
Cement slab?
You would not put the slab
just
in.
Just gravel.
Because you have that plumbing. So why go to that expense at this point?
Okay.
Oh, wow. I mean, you could put slab in there. Projections I've given.
Usually you think something has a floor. Yeah.
A lot of plazas do that.
If you don't know what your space looks like, why put it in to tear it back up?
Yeah.
Plumbing.
You'll see a lot of that in the commercial plazas before they build out because they don't know where to put. Mm-hmm. You have another question. Go ahead.
This is in regards to like middle school sports, like football. Currently, they practice at the middle school. What happens when they move to the high school? Where do you put them in? Will they go back to the middle school to practice? Outside? Outside sports. Because then if you get rid of the stadium here, it could be a field, practice field for soccer, football, any of the outside stuff. But if you get rid of it, then what happens?
There's a practice field we practiced back there for 50 years.
Where?
Right on the high school practice field.
Behind the weight room,
right.
Or behind the wrestling room on that little out driveway.
Would they still do that now at all, or would they just continue to be on the stadium field?
I,
when they practice,
they never use the stadium field for practice for football except on Thursdays. They,
you're talking middle school, right?
I'm talking middle school. I mean, would that interact between the two?
Well, and I will say this: you know, that's an excellent question, and it's one of the things that sooner or later the board will have discussions about selling property, and that's one of the things you have to balance, because you can always use space, you can always use practice fields, and how valuable that is that as opposed to selling property.
It's the same argument as, and I know it's not part of the school, but our baseball teams. You know, Grill has two T-ball fields.
Yeah.
If Grill sells, there's nowhere for those kids to play T-ball, essentially. I mean, it's tough.
Are you look at selling more valuable space to buying new? I don't know, but there's got to be some discussion. I know that's why there's five elected officials, and that's democracy at its best, and we have a good administration and our administrators to give us good advice, but it comes down to the students and our taxpayers. You know, at the end of the day, we answer to them. So I've been getting a lot of feedback, and I really appreciate the phone calls and the people who stop by. And when you look at one of the things I think is so neat is when you go down Columbia Woods Drive and you see the youth football and what's up and coming, unbelievable. You know, so when they look at that stadium and they look at the projects that are among us, we have a lot of good things that are coming to the city. But one of the things I look at when I see the potential of selling real estate, you know, you look at the center of town and you see the potential there of that 10 acres, and I think Rob brought up a good point. You know, Cindy did say it's not our job at one point to develop.
No, it isn't.
But it is our job to look at all the options, and if we can get a return on our investment and maybe look at buying potential at other property or other investments, then that is our job. So I believe it is. So it is a tough decision, but that's why there's five of us. So that's something that we all have to take a look at. So
that's the point. There is no downtown property. So what if you say we sell this, there's nothing else for us to purchase. We are landlocked.
Mm-hmm.
That what with what we bought at this for our current high school stadium, that was it. I mean, there is no other property, that's the point. And we have the potential also to build a new junior high. And where are we going to put that if we don't have any property to put it on? But I mean, $900,000 for all this property is like a nothing. I mean, if it was $5 million, go for it. But it's not. It's only $900,000.
But $900,000, that's the proposal.
That's not very much money at all. And in what we're talking dropping $900,000 more for a field house. It, you know, you don't sell something that's so valuable as property for a temporary, room.
Well, I think that was a very low estimate. I don't think that that's.
It was an appraisal.
I think I think it's.
I was surprised too that it was so little, but Norton's not exactly the metropolitan hub.
No.
Everybody wishes it would be. We've got so much empty storefronts here that it's. It's kind of, I don't even know what you would put in here. We would just have more empty buildings.
I understand, but Norton does need more stomachs. Norton does need more individuals, and I hope that there could be some mixed development, and that way it creates more students and more population, you know, and to grow. So, but I know that's a conversation for another day. I do like the idea that we go ahead and build this with a shell. And I like Rob's previous statement was, I don't want to be the woulda, coulda, shoulda board. I think that when we're moving forward and we're going to create this opportunity, as Mr. Collier has said, they're already here. His team is here. We can get this at a 20% less cost. I think from what I'm gathering from our business manager and our superintendent, is the opportunity is now. That's what I'm gathering. So I think that for all students involved, everybody should have an opportunity. So, and that includes our career tech, our what I like to call vocational. So I'd like to see this move forward with the 1.8 option.
Can we still get the stuff that we talked about,
yes,
if you don't mind, and
yep,
finance with PI renewal? Just to be sure, I know.
What are you asking for?
I asked Jake to talk to Steve or Mr. Wright, or Roger, about the space, like limitations, things of that nature, and then just a firm number if we get the renewal, just so I have it on paper.
Well, actually, we can just take these receipts that
she's
are here,
it.
May, July, August, September, November, whatever those are. You
okay
can just project that forward because they're relatively the same amount every time. Basically, we're getting $600,000 a year, a little over $600,000.
Okay, that's fair. But I still would like you to provide the information, if you don't mind, collect it.
Because it seems like we need to get moving forward. I think Mr. Collier is ready to move. You're putting a lot of effort into these wells, and I'm sure that Mr. Carmody and the construction team are ready to go. So I'd like to ask everybody, basically poll what your thoughts are. If we could just do that real quick and see where everybody's at. Mrs. Bennett?
I'm just not sure yet.
Well, I know it's a tough decision.
I like the idea of it. I like that we're creating space for future career tech. I just am not certain on the price tag, that's all.
We'll be ready to have a decision by next week.
I guess I'll have to.
Okay. Mr. Yule?
I'm in the same boat. I mean, I like the idea. I picture the opportunity for our students, and I want to be sure. I mean, I'm not confident in telling you yes or no right now, but I'm willing to make a decision next week.
Mr. Knight?
I'm going to second Lewis and Jennifer both. I think that, this is something. Do you want to say something?
No.
Okay. You just want to laugh under your breath. I'll wait till next week.
Okay. Mr. Webber?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, when we started this off, it was 1.2, and now we're up to 1.9. It just makes me nervous. And I know it's a great opportunity, but it just makes me nervous. I don't know. I'll decide by next week.
And our administrators, Mr. Dunn, do you have any comments?
No, I think that the board is looking at the things that they have to look at. You know, on one hand, you've got creating additional space, and with that comes the additional cost.
And Mrs. Hagenbush, any comments?
It's the same thing. It all hinges on whether we're able to pass the PI levy next year. Because if we're not, it's not good. And if we're able to pay, and I don't know, do you make decisions on what ifs? It's a tough one. Because we would lose, you put your $900,000 back here, but we would lose at least a year's worth of collections. So that makes it very tight, which is,
Because if we didn't pass it next year, then we passed it the year after that.
We'd lose a year's collections.
Well, I'm okay with showing my cards. I think this is, I'm the last one that wants to spend money, anybody that knows me. And I know that this board has really taken a look at this, and I appreciate everyone who has made the phone calls and looked into everything. So thank you all to looking into this, Mr. Collier and Mr. Carmen. I appreciate your efforts. And thanks to the citizens who continuously come and ask the right questions. I appreciate that. Anything further on this? Any last points? All right, moving on. Item 3, public participation. We don't have anybody who signed up. Does anybody wish to speak?
Can I just, I'm here.
You're more than welcome. Just state your name, please.
Tracy Reniart. I'm speaking as the Northern Classroom Teachers Association president, and it is with great respect that I address you, Mr. Dunn, and the board. I represent all of the classroom teachers, and I have been asked by the majority of our elementary teachers to ask if some of us could meet with Mr. Dunn and whomever, I don't know if it's one or two of the board members that are on the Curriculum and Instruction Committee. Since it's going to be late March, that we're going to kind of get the rollout on what elementary will look out. Many teachers have come to the executive board, and they would like us to really sit and look while we have a little bit more time to address if the current primary school could indeed become a pre-K K-1 building, and if the middle school could be a 2-3 and a 4-5 building, if we could at least just have conversations about that. Common Core standards band K and 1, 2 and 3, and then 4 and 5 together. And then science and social studies are not Common Core, so those bands are usually K2 and 3-5. There are some academic bands that are 4, 5, and 6. But we also, many of the fourth grade teachers in our district have been hearing, why hasn't the district had conversations about putting fifth grade back into elementary when we have an opportunity to do so, because there are not any districts in this area in which fifth grade is part of a middle school. So I'm just here tonight, again, representing the majority that asked me to come and ask if we could have meetings with those parties, with staff, K-5 staff that would like to participate, and Mr. Dunn, and whichever of the board members are on his curriculum and instruction, while we have the time to do so.
And I would say that, you know, there are two board committees that could certainly have that conversation and evaluate that. The Technology and Instruction Committee and the Operations Committee, both of those fit into that category to hear their concerns.
Do you have anything further?
No, that's all.
All right, thank you. Does anybody else wish to address the board? All right, thank you. Item 4, agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the agenda? Seeing none, can I have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Mrs. Bennett?
Yes.
Mr. Knight?
Yes.
Mr. Sams?
Yes.
Mr. Yule?
Yes.
Mrs. Lovell?
Yes.
Motion carries. Item 5, board business on committee reports, policy.
Nothing's changed since our last committee of the whole due to the cancellation of our last regular meeting. First reading on policies will be next Monday.
Thank you. Community engagement.
I'll do levy stuff underneath that. We have signs if anyone wants to sign. We're working on the levy. We are going to probably, after Thanksgiving, I talked to Mr. Dunn about having a meeting about the opening of the high school. So we're going to set that. We've got to look at our calendars and see what kind of, when we're going to have the grand opening and that kind of thing.
I do have a question for you, Cindy. Do we have anything planned where we need people to speak at for the levy or anything? I know we, you were talking.
Well, yeah, we didn't have, I don't have the master list on me, but I know we have Grill, nothing really speaking, but we have, and I didn't know this, I and my fault, but Grill is a Saturday and a
Tuesday.
So I think we just put on the schedule Tuesday.
I didn't know there was a Saturday.
It's this
one
Saturday.
Either. Yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't know that until.
I know, I was just on, where did we see that? Just like.
Well, no, actually, it's been in the paper, and Mr. Sack announced it, but you might.
I must have missed it. So we had planned for a couple people for the Tuesday one, but we need to figure out Saturday, and I will be out of town this weekend, and it's not. But that, so we have that. We had a couple people that already participated in parent meetings at the elementaries, and will continue to be a voice at the parent meetings as those come up. I'm trying to think of what else we had. We covered the football games. We have only two left, I think. And I'm I'm trying to think. I apologize. I don't have the paper. There wasn't a whole lot. The bonfire. A cornerstone.
Are you looking at me to come back?
I was just telling. No. I was saying that was one that we have. Yeah, we have people. I'm just trying to update you on where we have events.
I could do this Saturday at Grill the first hour, but I can't stay for the second hour if there's somebody else that can.
What time is it?
11 to 1, I believe.
Yeah.
I thought it started at 10.
Oh, is it 10?
It's 10 to 2.
Thank you.
And Tuesday, it's 5 to 7.
Thank you.
18.
Yeah, I'm going to be there Tuesday.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I was going to be there Tuesday, and I know Rob was willing to.
I could go to the Grill 10 to 11 on Saturday, but that's when you're at there?
I can't do after the afternoon.
I can't either.
I'll be at work.
And I can do 10 to 11, but after that, it'll be an afternoon.
Yeah, we'll get. But okay. Other than that, we have it covered. I'll get the list. Mm-hmm. I have it written down. I'm sorry.
Are you doing 10 to 11?
We can talk later.
Okay.
I could do something.
But we have a few things, but most of them are covered. We really didn't have, the only thing that I think we have really that's most important that was left is the last mailbox drop.
Yes.
Of getting volunteers for that. That's the only thing that really.
The process of doing one now, and then.
Right.
And then he has to put the paper again toward the end of the month, and then the final paper drops. Yeah, we haven't gotten that far.
Right, right, but I think that's
the next meeting.
And signed.
All right, anything else?
No.
Technology instruction, Mr. Bennett.
Okay, couple things under that. About 2.5 weeks ago, Roger Wright with the Four Cities Compact sent us a draft survey. And both Mr. Dunn and myself individually responded. We didn't feel that it had enough proposed programs on there to help students that are not college bound. So we both gave separate feedback to him. Just today, he sent another draft of, there's a 10 different potential programs that we're surveying to see what students are interested in, and then once we get that information, we would pursue those routes. But I would anticipate that we will regroup with our committee before finalizing that survey. I didn't have a chance to talk to you about that, but
yeah, that would be fine.
I would hope that we would all be able to meet next week and then get the survey out there and go forward with getting the data and see what our students are interested in. Mr. Manier, thank you for speaking. I do think that is something that we definitely need to explore, is keeping our fifth grade in our elementary if we are able to somehow work that out, if it makes sense from a teaching standpoint and a logistics standpoint. So that is something that instruction and technology can certainly meet with you and Mr. Dunn and any other teachers that are interested in talking about it. And then the last thing I have is Interiors and Aesthetics met again on Friday, and I believe it's our last decision, is working on the gym floor design. And there's another, some changes that are going to be made apparently to the last design that we were given, so hopefully it'll come back that this is it, and it'll be something that we're all comfortable with and are excited about. So.
Yes, okay. I did speak, and I was at the meeting, so if you guys don't mind, I'll interject.
Nope.
Got back to the designer and the contractor today.
Good.
We're going to have a new rendering first by, he said at the end of this week. I would actually expect it the first of next week.
I was going to bug you because I hadn't heard from you today.
I thought I'd see you tonight.
Okay.
So I would tell you. So I made very clear the points that you guys made to me at the meeting and the things you liked and didn't like. So I'm confident that this rendering will make you happy.
Good, good. Make the committee happy.
Yeah, you'll be in the committee, yes.
Thank you. That's all I have.
All right. And operations, we have not met since our last meeting, but are we going to meet again to talk about the move to get all the, I guess, the groups together? That I wanted to meet with all the the building principals and kind of get them involved, all them.
I do have meetings in the next week or so with the transition teams for the high school and middle school being the most, you know, obviously evident move coming right now. I mean, we can meet as an operations committee to go over. I'm putting together a tentative schedule of how and when we're going to move certain things, like, you know, you got to think science and art, they got to start a little early, there's a lot of stuff there. Guidance, things like that. So I've been working with Keith Fetzer, our maintenance supervisor, and just the best means and methods that we can do that. So, I mean, we can discuss it.
I'd just like to see their points and make sure that, and it's a big transition, it's an exciting transition, but I'd like to make sure that all the teacher and everybody's input is there. And I like that conversation about all the boxes, make sure they have enough boxes.
They've got a lot of boxes.
Good.
Do we have a confirmed elementary transition team?
We have a list of teachers that have volunteered to be on that team, and it has expanded, so we have more people on that team. So, okay. And we have not started meeting specifically with them. One of the things that I started last week, and we'll get through the rest this week, is I'm meeting with the staffs in each building to get general information from them and answer questions that they have. So I was at Primary and Grill last week, and we'll be meeting with Cornerstone this week to get input and answer questions as well. So.
Okay.
They still haven't striped the new entrance on Easton.
They haven't put the top coat on. We added the white down the sides to help in the meantime, but that's not a finished surface.
But to the entrance to the, on Easton Road, and the city's been striping, you know, the center of town and all that, but that really needs to have a school entrance. We talked about that. Yeah, it needs to be a safe area there. And I don't know why they didn't, you know, put the school zone, you know, restripe all that. Can you talk to somebody with the city? I like to make sure that's all safe and coordinated. But that entrance on Easton, you know, with the games and such, and everybody's entering and exiting out of there, make sure we have the proper signage. I know that you talked about at the last operations meeting, but I'd like to make sure that that gets done. Thank you.
The other, real quick though, the other thing on the operations meeting that we talked about was the curb. Did you ever meet with anybody?
He's right there.
On Easter? Yeah.
I didn't know we talked about it in the committee. I know that's a.
Oh, he wasn't there.
No, but Matt's here now, so you can ask him.
That's a major concern that I know it's been.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. I thought he was there. He said he was going to a meeting with him.
Yeah, and he had to leave.
You said that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Too many meetings.
And I did talk to Matt about that.
Part of that
meeting.
We think it's kind of an optical illusion because it's so wide there, and to the right side of it is a walking / bike path. So the road, it appears to be skinnier than it is. But what we're going to do on the 17th, which is next Monday, Transportation Department already had this planned to kind of bring some bus drivers in and do some dry runs kind of throughout the whole campus down there. They're going to specifically go down and test are we able to get buses in and out.
Okay.
So we're going to test that out.
I think people are going to drive right into that bike thing.
Well, that bike thing is going to have delineated markers, reflectors that are bolted to the top of the asphalt that will clearly delineate that bike path.
Because on Barber Road in front of Fred Martin, they take those out all the time. The pedestrian, they're constantly being. So I hope that it's clearly, you know, because it's dark. There's no lit roadway there.
I like that idea with our transportation because I think that'll help. But hopefully you're right. But pulling out of there and somebody else pulling in a SUV in a car, I was scared. So I...
If I could interject, one thing...
And I'm not a bad driver.
We, as the builder of the school, we need to look at where the property line is on the south side there.
Yeah.
And we need to look at maybe clearing some brush out of there. And even if it isn't school property, somebody should talk to the homeowner. We've talked about this. We talked about this Wednesday. Getting the property line marked again. If it's not your guys' property, maybe go into the homeowner next door and ask them, hey, do you mind if we clear 20 feet back? Because what happens is it sneaks up on you. So people turn that corner going northbound too. That road is as wide as Easton Road almost. So two cars travel down Easton Road all the time. That radius that's outside of that drive is wider than Higgins or any of the other radiuses coming off of Easton. So echoing what Jake said, my opinion, mine only, the fence pole is on the outside of the curb right now too. You get rid of that, the optical illusion of the stripe, I think it's people thinking, hey, wow, this is weird. But it is a travelable that is as wide as the road coming in off of Cleveland Madison. It's all the same. So if now Cleveland Madison has a turn lane out of it, that's definitely a difference.
Okay. I just think if the road was clearly marked school zone, and you know, there was some signage, it would slow people down, because if you're 35 and you know, they come up on you there.
It definitely, I mean, I'm 47 years old, I've lived in North for 47 years, and I know it's there, and I still almost drive by.
Oh, Mr. Shaner said in our last meeting, he drove by it twice.
If you don't see if it's not daylight, you don't see the concrete either.
Yeah. You just drive right there.
You start to turn.
Well, and there'll be some things there. The sign that's being installed right now out there will have some light on it. As well as signage has been discussed, it just hasn't been installed yet, but I will re-coordinate that.
Mm-hmm. I just want it to be safe and people slow down. And so, thank you. All right, finance, Mr. Knight.
Yeah, we met this morning. Stephanie went over the forecast. Are you going to do that next week with your report then, the forecast?
No, I was going to do it tonight.
Okay, so we went over that. Also, Tracy, Renee, we talked about that today. Jennifer brought that up about the fifth grade situation that just happened to come up, and I think we agree that that's something we do need to look into. That's one thing that was discussed shortly. The other thing, and I didn't really bring up much, is being on the finance committee, I've had some coaches and some athletes' parents ask about the brick money. I think you mentioned something to me, that there was something in one of you guys' meeting that was discussed about that.
In the athletic council, it was brought up by Mr. Sams and PVAC, because PVAC had some questions. It was the first I heard of it. So Jason may be able to elaborate on, I was just part of the council that heard it. So.
Yeah, Todd just asked where it went and why did it get dispersed the way it did, so.
I'll tell you.
Yeah. Todd,
who? He's head of
Todd King.
Todd King.
Oh, Todd.
He just said that on the back of their flyer, it's supposed to go back towards the turf, and he just wondered why it didn't, and why was there different flyers set?
When the brick fund was started, we had no bond issue passed. So the brick fund was bricks to build a stadium, and that's what the money was going to go for. Months after that, the bond issue passed. So it's decided the money is going to go for things that kids need, like hurdles, that kind of thing, kids that use the stadium. In the meantime, after that, the turf came into being. So people asked if their money could go toward the turf fund. So the people that wanted their money to specifically go to the turf fund gave it straight to the athletic department. That was about $8,000. They did not pay for the bricks. They kept the entire money that they collected. So the money that was left in the brick fund was distributed between boys soccer, girls soccer, football, track, cheerleading, thanks to Matt, is that it?
I think so.
Okay, that money was distributed. We gave an amount, like, you know, track got 4,000 because they have 100 kids, they needed hurdles, all those things. It was different amounts depending on the amount of kids that were in each sport. Then the leftover money that was never ever intended to go to turf went to turf, which was close to $4,000. So that probably flyer that they're seeing was when, after that all happened, the athletic department, the people that wanted their money to go to turf went straight to them. So they ended up with the turf fund ended up with about 12 grand from a fundraiser that was never intended to go to them. So they did pretty well.
So some people, our coaches, gave it back.
The football coach asked if they could donate their $3,000 to the turf fund, and they were told you can do whatever you want with it. So that's probably what they did.
Okay.
So then they ended up getting, 12. So then the turf fund ended up with 15 grand, and we only made about 25 on fundraiser. Or maybe it was more than that.
25,000?
No, I had
25. Oh, I don't know. I had nothing to do with the fundraiser.
Yeah. I'm trying to think now, because it messes it up with the 8,000 that went directly to the athletic department. But they ended up with 15.
15,000?
Yeah, eight, and then four is 12, and then John Tanksley gave his three, yeah.
I just think he should, maybe somebody should talk to him so that he understands. I think he didn't quite understand.
I did have a conversation at great length with him about that.
Okay.
And said exactly what Cindy said, so he should understand.
Well, I didn't understand that in that meeting, so you talked to him after the meeting.
Well, but I'm just saying I had that conversation with Coach Tanksley, so.
Okay, I'm talking about Todd King, the head of the PBABC.
Well, we did have that conversation.
What are you looking at me for?
No, I'm talking about after that athletic council meeting. Okay. I don't think he understood still, because I didn't understand it.
I thought he did at the athletic council meeting, but I'll gladly talk to him.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say nobody knew exact amounts or what was distributed to the teams. I'll say clearly I didn't. Cindy, you were pretty specific on certain. Yeah, that wasn't said, but I mean,
they desperately needed hurdles.
Right. I only saw one flyer, so I.
Yeah.
And there were several that were printed during that time because it started in when we passed the bond issue 13. So this started in the beginning of 2013. So there were different versions that Pat Santelli had made and distributed.
It's just like anything else. I think it's communication, and people probably had questions because they didn't see the initial fundraiser, don't know the root of it, and then you get the new one that was handed out at the football game, and it says, this is going to turf or whatnot, and then people find out, well, this coach got this. Like I said, the first time I heard of it was athletic council, so I can understand where the confusion is. We just need to be clear on the process, and it sounds like we can justify that.
I thought Todd was satisfied at the athletic council meeting, but I will do a follow-up phone call.
And in fact,
bless you.
We have sold every single spot.
I heard, because I heard more
so
people.
So what were, I called Mr. Howerton, left the message, but he hasn't called me back yet. We are going to cut out more cement. Because the brick company has offered to do a brick in memory of Kyle. And we have absolutely no space to put it. So we're going to cut out more.
Do another spot.
And we're going to do more, and we're going to hand that over to the athletic department so that they can make it. That money can be applied toward the turf.
Do you have a time frame on that? Because I've had quite a few people ask about.
I got to talk to Rob.
Okay.
And then I'll let you know.
Could you let me know? Because I asked that in the meeting. Is there any more space? And somebody was tossing around one more space, and they were talking about it for Kyle, but.
There was one more space, but then. They missed a brick that they didn't print.
Oh, you got that one handled?
I don't think we'll have a problem.
I told her to call you.
Think we'll have a problem.
Yeah, it's in my car. So, but when they offered to do a brick for Kyle, we're like, okay, we're going to open. So Pat and I looked at it the other day, and it's just a matter of how many spaces Mr. Beggar cuts out to put more bricks in. So
Let us know, because I know there's quite a few people that were interested.
We had to cut it off because it was like, okay, that was it.
Right.
And we were really surprised because when they put out the spot that it goes in, there were quite a few spaces that were left, but then they filled up really quickly. So.
Okay.
If you guys need some help with getting some concrete out, let us know.
Getting what?
Getting some of the concrete out there to create additional space.
You can handle it. Okay.
The next time that athletic council meets, can we get an update on the turf efforts? I mean, we got a report a couple months ago. We don't have a balance of what is owed, and we don't have what efforts are planned for the future other than.
I believe he was going to, because they just had the raffle this weekend, so
right.
I believe he was getting that together and going to present that.
Plus, and really, we should have Mr. Turf? Howerton put that together.
Yeah.
Because he has that information, and he does not attend the athletic council meeting, so.
It's just been a little while since we've gotten a balance and what's anticipated for the future.
And the thing, there's always pledges on there. There's amount for pledges. Is that money that has, is yet to come in, or is that the total amount of pledges? Has part of that money come in? I just, I'm kind of confused on that one.
So, moving on, we did discuss, I know I asked.
Hold on, there's a, we have a question there.
I just wanted to ask, Amy and I both are on the board for the PPABC. Cindy, could you send me an email with that kind of explanation of what happened? Because it was quite a to-do at our last meeting with people asking, and how did this happen, and how did we decide, and who decided? Another thing is, you mentioned 12,000 from a first disbursement.
Eight and four.
Well, the about $8,000 went straight to the athletic department for turf. I never even saw that money. I was just giving the orders and I played.
Athletic department or PPABC?
PPABC. Yeah, PPABC.
Specifically for the turf.
No, it went to the athletic department.
We did not deposit any money for
no,
that.
No, it didn't run, it did. They collected them.
If you could just, like Amy and I were kind of talking here, if you could just tell us all that so that we can go back and say, okay, we do have some details because.
Yes.
And look for those deposits because a lot of stuff switched along. Yeah.
Right.
Because the there's more hands too.
Okay.
So that we can make sure.
Mr. Howerton has that number. He has that number too.
They were going to ask the coaches that anybody that did get the money and wanted to donate it back to the turf fund could do so. Another thing I just wanted to comment about the raffle this weekend is not for the turf fund. What we did at the night races, that is not for the turf fund specifically.
Thank you. Part of our meeting also today, I spoke with Stephanie. She's working on a kind of a run through with open enrollment. When I first ran for the board, one of the things that surprised me was that a lot of parents and community, you know, people had an interest in open enrollment and asked me about it. And I gave them my word I would look into it. I tried to honor that word this year through Stephanie. I met with her last week and I looked at some of the numbers. I'm going to run through these, the numbers that we have. I mean, Stephanie went over.
Can I do my forecast? Do you mind if I do that? Because a lot of the information that I gave for you for the open enrollment reflects back to the forecast because I use all the numbers I use come off of this. Do you mind?
I don't care.
I won't go into big detail, but then when the open enrollment reports that you had me run, pass it that way, reflect back to this. And I don't know if a lot of you remember, I'm going to kind of keep this short. Right there. Come on, get with the program. From what we had updated in May, we do a forecast in October, and we also update it again in May with any new information that we have. The state budget hasn't changed this year. It's still based on what we had last year, so there's not a lot of changes. It's not a reappraisal year for property taxes, so not a lot of differences there. So everything is pretty much where we were at the end of last year. I've reflected a slight increase in property values. The housing market starting to recover, so I've increased that just minimal amount. The money from the state, which is the unrestricted line item, shows a decrease this year of $100,000, but that is because there was an adjustment that they took out this year to set for the settlement for last year. They kind of do a true up. So that's reflected there. The largest increase that we've had, and Rob, this goes back to that, is open enrollment has increased this year $162,000. Last year we were funded for 587 students, and this year we're estimating 605. And I estimate low because kids are in and out. So I never budget exactly what we think we're going to have because kids will move away, things happen. So I try to keep that conservative. Our expenditures, our largest line item as usual is personnel because that's what we do, is pay people to educate our students. Our teachers this year settled for a 1.5% increase this year. So that's reflected in there. That's different than what was there in May. We've added two new employees and a tech position. Now the tech position is, we did away with a purchase service that we had with EMG, Epiphany, I couldn't think of the name. So that's an offset. It's going into salaries now, but it is coming off of our purchase service line item. Along with the negotiations with the teachers, there was also some reductions in benefits. I don't want to say reductions in benefits because it wasn't reductions in benefits. It was a change in structure of benefits that produced a savings. That savings offsets the increase in the personnel cost. So the benefit line item decreases $184,000. In May, we were expecting a 6% increase on our health care, and because of the restructuring of the health care, it was only a 0.8% increase. And then the purchase service line item, as I said, the decrease that shows is due to the outsourcing of the, or not outsourcing the technology, that's keeping it in-house. And those are the major changes that we had from May of last year. Our quickest thing that we do is if you slide down to line 6.01, that's showing that we are definitely spending more than what we bring in every year, which is the nature of school funding. We pass a levy, you get some money up front, and then you kind of eat into that balance, and then you have to pass another levy because levies are flat funded. They don't increase or change with the students. You get your money, and then they just do this as your expenses kind of increase. That flatlines, it catches up, and then you have to unfortunately ask for more money. That's just kind of the way that the funding works. So that line item going across definitely shows that. Our cash balance carried over from last year was $1.8 million. So that allows us to, as I said, spend more than what we've brought in, but we're eating into that cash balance, which makes the levy necessary for, sorry, my mouth doesn't work, makes the levy that we have in November necessary. This year, we're predicted to end with $785,000 as a carryover. Next year, $321,000. And then in fiscal year 2019, as it stands, we're in the deficit, $36,000. Again, that's 3 years out. A lot can change between now and then. $36,000 on a $22 million budget isn't a lot of money. So we need to be careful what we do and look at everything that we do. And hopefully the levy, if it passes this November, will get us through 2021 with a carryover balance, just with the small nine mills. There we go, people. The 1.9 mil levy will get us through 2021. So that's what I needed for that. I will have this Monday again, as I usually do. I'll keep going over that this week. If anything updates, anything changes, I'll let you know. Otherwise, this will be what I have Monday.
Okay. Well, anyways, me and
Okay,
Stephanie.
Thank you.
We met last week, me and Stephanie, we went through some numbers, and I'll let you know where we're at on open enrollment. Roughly, open enrollment started in 93-94. That time period, I think we agreed, Stephanie, we had roughly 25.
I don't know what we had.
Exact.
I don't go back that far, yeah.
We estimated roughly, compared to other years, 2,500 students. In 2001, we had 2,463 Norton students. In 2001, we had 160 open enrollment students, which is a little bit less than 7%. Last year, we had 1,996 Norton students.
We were actually funded for 2002, so we won't. Okay. Five students different.
We had 575 students open enrollment. This year, we actually increased one student from Norton, and we went to 615, you said 605.
That was the count that I had, but like I said, sometimes it's that number fluctuates depending on, sometimes somebody's open enrolled and they're actually in the process of moving into the district. It's a fluctuating number, not fluctuating 30 or 40 kids, but it can fluctuate 5 or 10 very easily.
So we're basically from 2001, we go from 0 to 2001 under 7% open enrollment, and then to, at this point, we're almost 25% open enrollment, which is 1 out of 4 students. And that's one thing I think, and I think that Jennifer agreed, that we need to discuss as a board, maybe options in the future looking into this we talked about today.
Well, I think, I mean, you've raised it a number of times, and I think that, yes, putting the information out there, and then if there's anything that needs to be changed as a board, making that decision.
Well, my concern is, let's see.
We'll talk about it in a second.
Yeah, my concern is we have a situation where the Norton enrollment is coming down as open enrollment is going up. And I think that as a board, that we should be concerned about that. And I think that we need to try to find ways that we can reverse that and try to, and I think Stephanie will agree, that that if we can get kids to move into Norton and families to move into Norton and build houses, that's the best solution for us financially, correct?
Building the house is the important part.
Yeah. So we got to figure out how to get real growth in Norton to get those numbers to kind of come back. So I like to look at it as a board and maybe see what we could, you know, do to basically stop the growth of open enrollment and possibly even see if we can get the growth of Norton students. That happened last week. And then this week, I talked to some parents and a teacher contacted me, and because she knew I was looking at open enrollment and asking questions. And she said she would like to speak to the board, but she wants to remain anonymous. I can respect that. So she said, here's some questions I think you should ask the board from the teachers. How many open enrollment students receive speech, academic tutors, Title I, reading and mathematics? A limited number of children who get these extra help, and it is based on the lowest scores. Is it really okay that open enrollment students would get this and not the child of a Norton resident and taxpayer? That's what a teacher asked me to ask, so I told her I would ask that for them. I just think that this is stuff that we need to look into as a board. I think that, you know, there's a lot of concerns in that area.
And I certainly don't disagree that this is a board conversation and the board should discuss open enrollment. In terms of that type of what services students get and so forth, understand the law on open enrollment is very clear. If you have open enrollment as a district, you cannot pick and choose students. If a student applies for open enrollment, if they have not been expelled in the past semester or year, and you have a program that meets their needs that's not full, the law dictates that you accept them.
Well, again, this was
so you're not picking and choosing. I'm just clarifying.
I know.
When you start talking about which students get what services, if the district decides to continue open enrollment, then by law the superintendent would have to accept them.
I understand. Like I said, this was just a question from a staff member who wanted me to ask those questions.
The way I understand that question, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the concern is not so much the capability of the student, you know, coming in, is that student is using services that maybe if that student wasn't... I'm saying open enrollment wasn't part of the district that our Norton students may get instead of them, because is it, from what I'm understanding, maybe somebody can help me, is it testing? Is it, I mean, Title I and all this, is, I'm assuming is because of testing, right?
No.
Or were they great, were they land on the testing scale? I mean, what determines a tutor?
Title I, we get a budget.
Well, he mentioned like five things different.
Okay, well, there's a couple different things. Okay. Title I is federally funded money that we get, I want to say $175,000, and don't quote me on the number because I'd have to double check that. That's based on the number of free and reduced students that we have.
Okay.
So that counts open enrollment students. So because we have students open enrolled who qualify for Title I because they're on free and reduced lunches, we receive more money. That money right now allows us to have a teacher in every elementary building to service Title I kids.
Okay.
Then they qualify for that by being low scoring. I'm not sure about that side of it. My concern with the Title I, and I don't have a way to answer this, is if we don't have open enrollment students, we would definitely get less Title I money. Now, to what level that would be, I don't know. If we would get 1.5 teachers, if we would only have one teacher to service all the buildings. So there could be a couple kids who are on a bubble somewhere that might get services, but there could also be kids that wouldn't get services because possibly, and I don't know this, open enrollment students maybe are more poor than the Norton students, so maybe we get more funding because they come in, and because it's on that count, but they're served on their scores, we don't really know where that filters in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
That one I don't know. Now, as far as the other, he's talking speech and other special ed things. Those are all serviced by IEPs, so it doesn't matter. No kid's services can ever be cut, and correct me if I'm wrong on this. This is my understanding, because Eric always tells me it's special ed and we have to pay for it. If a kid, no matter who it is, qualifies, whether it's for speech, whether it's for tutoring, whether it's for more services, OTPT, the services that we give children is quite extensive. If they qualify, regardless, we have to serve them. So somebody else is not going to get served because we have to serve more kids.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter. Am I saying that correctly?
That's correct.
Let me ask this. So we currently have open enrollment. If the board decides in the future, you know, we need to put, you know, we need to control this a little bit more. Obviously, you have kids in the school system. You don't want anything to happen to those kids. I mean, I think it'd be not right. But if you say, okay, we're not accepting anymore, we want to freeze open enrollment. That's capable. You can do that. You just, the kids that are already in your school, stay in your school. You're just not accepting any open enrollment.
Or just creates a policy and approves that at a board meeting, ending open enrollment. It doesn't mean you have to send people back, but yes, that you can do that as a district.
Now, based on the conversations that we had today, I ran, and you have those here. Like I said, this is based on the forecast that I just gave you, all the comparisons that I did. And I took everything out of fiscal year 2017 just because that shows that going out 5 years, I know we could never go down the line and say, hey, we're cutting open enrollment tomorrow. By the way, go home. That's not my intent. It was just a place to start looking at numbers. So the very first one I gave you, it says no open enrollment. That is taking all of the open enrollment students we had out. So if we decided that at some point we weren't going to have open enrollment students, that takes the payments that come in for them out. What I took out as far as teachers goes is if we take 600 students, that's roughly two classes per grade level. So based on that, I took 26 teachers out. And those are not, I did not look at certification areas. I did not look at, you can teach math at the high school and we don't need to cut that. I just took the 26th lowest teachers on our pay scale because that's the rift at the bottom and took out 26 teachers. I took out the benefits that went along with that. The purchase service number and it's all in the all other operating money under revenue changes because we get funded for any special ed student that comes to Norton. We bill back their district. So if they get speech here, we turn around and bill, say, Barberton back for the full amount of their speech or any services that they do receive. So I took that amount also out of, it comes, the revenue comes out of all other operating revenue, which is 1.06. But then in response to that, it's a year offset because we'd still be billing for the prior year. That expense comes out of 3.03. And along with that, in the open enrollment line item, I took, or with no open enrollment, and these are just shot in the dark numbers based on percentages because there's no real way to look at it on a short time frame. But I took out 26 teachers, I took out an administrator and a secretary, I took out 10 aides and a custodian, one bus route, because if they can get to a bus route, we'll bring them. And I took out $90,000 in extracurriculars with the thought that, you know, that's extra coaches, that's clubs, you know, whatever. That was just strictly based on the percentage of open enrollment students we have, 7 through 12, and then that percentage that went along with that. So, again, it's not this is what we're going to do. This was just my best guess at what expenses may go away and what revenue would go away along with that. What you see there, then at the very bottom, I added in whatever amount of a levy we would have to end up where we are today with the budget I gave you, which is a negative basically $36,000 in fiscal year 19. Because that was the only way I could figure out how to compare it back to where we are right now is what we would need to do to replace that amount. So with no open enrollment students at all, we would have to have a 7.25 mil levy to replace the revenue that we lost, or we would have to reduce more staffing. But the only amount of staffing I took out is what I could say absolutely it seemed like went with those students that came in. If there could be more, I don't know. I can't make that decision, but I just tried to look at what it touched. So the first one I gave you is no open enrollment students. The second one I gave you is with 100 open enrollment students. They're listed at the top. The third one, 200 open enrollment students, then 300, and 400.
What's the last one?
Okay, let me get to those two. So those are just changes in open enrollment, and those were the only changes. And again, the teachers were an estimate that went along with it. Again, once I got to where we still had a number of open enrollment students, I didn't reduce as many aides, and at some point I left administrators in because it seemed like we could reduce 100 kids from top to bottom, but you wouldn't necessarily lose any kind of administration that went with that, or secretarials or something like that. And strictly guess, I can go back to those numbers and look at them differently. The next one I gave you, it says, is that the next one? 10?
Did I skip one?
Is that, okay, which one?
No, you went 400 to 20.
Okay, 20. This is if we took out 20 every year and then reduced a teacher in going along with it. So in fiscal year 2007, I took out 20 open enrollment students and I reduced one teacher. The thought process behind that is we didn't take in open enrollment students, or I mean kindergarten open enrollment. So we could reduce a teacher there. The next year I took out an additional 20 students and reduced an additional teacher. And I did that for the 5 years going out. That's the one that came out probably closest to where we are right now. I didn't reduce anything else that went along with it, just those numbers. And that one was a 0.71 mil levy to balance out. No, that doesn't balance out.
I'm sorry.
That's just where it gets us.
Yeah, it was better.
Yeah, don't look at that bottom line number. I must have put the wrong levy amount in.
20 a year.
Yeah, don't look at the levy, because that increases us by $120,000 to the good, so it'd be a little less than 0.71 mils. I apologize.
So then the last one is 10.
And the last one is subtracting 10 open enrollment students, adding 10 resident students to replace them, and assuming that two of those residents actually built new homes in Norton, and the homes are estimated to be $200,000 homes.
What are they going to build?
I don't know. It was a thought. So I'm just trying to look at different scenarios.
Stephanie, I want to thank you for putting this together, because obviously it's been a hot topic. There's been parents, and I with nearby schools and the issues that they're having. I know, Rob had reached out to me in the beginning, and the first thing I thought of was obviously our current students who have been a part of our school system now. Some of them 10 years, 9 years, whatever grade they're in, but they've been in it through thick and thin. And I think the first option of getting rid of open enrollment is just unheard of. But I think it's something that I agree. I think we should look at. And I think Laura Denko had sent me the same open enrollment list that she had sent you. And, throughout the grade levels, I was going to try to find the email, we're pretty consistent with open enrollment, with I think our one class was 65 open enrollment kids, but from a kindergarten to like fourth grade, we're anywhere between like 45 and 55 or somewhere around there. And if you look at kindergarten, and it's flexible. I mean, open enrollment's flexible. If if it's something that we can look at, and I'm so happy to see that, the last one is if we decided to look at this and maybe freeze it starting at a kindergarten level, because that's where you're I thought that's where you get your most open enrollment. Your kids start in school, and but I was surprised. Well, and I guess
they just keep
adding as the grade levels go, but where it looks like that may be an option to, it would be a safe experiment, it's starting at a lower level and seeing where it goes from there, and if we have to adjust. But bottom line, it's a financial decision, and I think beyond just these numbers, there's so much more that you have to look at as far as what services, when you get to that point, will our current students not have access to because we don't have an efficient amount of students overall to supply those services with finances. But I just want to thank you for putting it together. It's eye-opening, and I'd be more than happy to be a part of any discussions.
Well, one thing's for sure, and I agree, because me and you did talk a lot, Lou, is that, and I told the parents that contacted me that you can't just do away with open enrollment. It would be a shock to the system. Me and Stephanie talked about it, and plus, I agree with you, it wouldn't be right for the kids that are already in the system. But I do think that we need to try to look at it yearly, at our enrollment of Norton students, and try to adjust it accordingly. And the ideal situation would be to, again, try to get Norton enrollment up and at the same time decrease open enrollment if we could do that. And so that's basically where we were with that. I appreciate, Stephanie, what you did there and all your work.
Thank you. So,
what else did we talk about, Jennifer? I can't remember.
I think that covers it.
Open enrollment is a topic that I constantly get asked about too, and I think we have to put a lot of thought process into that and make sure that it's the right decision, because the school district's not in business to make money, and we have to take a look at every avenue to make sure that. And I agree with what Lewis's statement is. The students that are in our district are a part of our district, and they are Norton students. And I don't want to see that go away, but I would like to take a look at where we're at or where we're going as far as our future is, and looking at where we do want to travel with open enrollment, because that is a subject that I do often get asked. So thank you for looking into that.
I think we ought to clarify. I mean, you would never get rid of the current students that you have for open enrollment.
That was just one of the options that was on here. Just
yeah, I just because I hear that a lot.
That
yeah.
Because I think
we're all in agreement.
Yeah. I saw that and I was like,
well, I keep getting people keep saying to me that open enrollment costs us so much money. That's why I went with let's take it out and look at it and see what kind of cost is really in that. And that's why I was trying to do the different target numbers, was just to show that how the cost changes on all of that. Because we did an example with Rob, and I used him as my example. If he sells his house in Norton and somebody with two children moves into it, we're not going to receive any more taxes at all, because he's already paying, I'm assuming you're paying your taxes, we're already receiving that money.
It's online.
those two students that move in there, because the way our state funding works, we only get we don't get quite $3,000 per student that comes in, that lives here. So those two students that moved into his house would increase our revenue about $6,000. Two kids that come from Barberton or anywhere for open enrollment bring $12,000 with them. So when you're looking at some of that, it's what we need to do is new houses. That's where we get our increase on our property taxes, plus the students coming in. But if they move into an existing house in Norton and they were living somewhere else, we actually lost money on them.
So our funding from the state?
They give $6,000 per student, but then it's reduced by the amount that they feel that your district can pay for educating those students. So ours gets reduced down to 45%. So we get like $2,900 something, so almost $3,000 per student.
They expect us to pay 55%.
And the actual cost is roughly $9,000. Is that correct? The educated student in Norton.
Yeah, all in. So there's just so many different ways to look at it. And there's not one right way and one wrong way or anything that. But that was just, you know, when I'm looking at the dollars and cents, which is my side that I'm tasked with, is, well, I look at this and this is so much more. And that helps so much. So that's why there's so many different avenues to look at, different things to see, and how, if it's something that we want to control a little bit, what's the least shock to the system and the easiest way to control it from the board level so that we're not losing any money and we're able to maintain what we have.
Well, I always talk about, and I talked about last meeting, the big picture, trying to find the big picture here. And I think that one of the things that I personally do, and I think that it'd be interesting if all of us did it over the holiday season, is when I talk to, you know, young families or families are looking, I always ask them, what are you looking for in a town or a school system? You know, and it's interesting, you know, what they're looking for, we have, and we've built a great foundation. You know, when you look at, you know, they want, obviously a school that offers great education. I think we can check that off the list. I think we do that. The facilities that we've built are stunning. I think you can check that off the list also. And they want extracurricular activities, and I think that we're working on making sure all that's going to be up and running fine, so I think we can check that off the list. So I think that we have to kind of look at it as, you know, and this is where I'm concerned, and I keep saying this, I'm concerned because I want Norton to grow. And I think for Norton to grow the right way, it does have to grow within, like you said, Stephanie, with house building and developing, and that's the good way to grow. Where I'm concerned is the way we're growing. Like I said, you look in the last 15 years, you go from under 7% to almost 25%, and it's kind of speeding up. We grew Norton students one this year and open enrollment by 40. So, you know, I talk about the woulda, coulda, shoulda board. Do we want the board of the future to look at us and say, why didn't they look at this and see if they could get this somewhat, you know, why we were here and not to keep letting it expand? So that's all my interest is. I just think that's a good discussion that we need to have. I don't know if it's ever been discussed on a board in the past, but I think that definitely this is something that needs to be looked at probably on a yearly basis as the numbers come in and see what we think. That's what I recommend. So,
anything else on finance?
I'm just going to say the piece that is not being discussed here is programming. And if you start losing students, especially at the high school level in droves, you start cutting teachers, you're going to start cutting programs because we're not going to be able to afford the AP class that has 10 kids in it. Or the different, you know, we have to offer those things because we need to make sure that our kids are ready for college. And if we start losing those, then we're not only going to lose our open enrollment students, we're going to lose our Norton students too. So you have, there's a fine line there, and that wasn't even, which is, you know, how do you put a monetary value on that? But that's a big piece of this, is our programming at all levels, actually, but especially at high school.
If you do that, you're going to lose students. Norton students are going to go elsewhere.
Yes,
if
you're not
you
going
to,
yes.
Those types of things.
You know, they're going to go where they get it, you know.
Well, we have.
I agree with you. That's why I said there's the services or programs that our students have because of the student body that we have. But I would also, you know, the unknown is what did we do before open enrollment? Did we not offer those type of classes?
Yeah, we had 2,600 kids.
Huh?
We had 2,600 kids.
Yeah.
So that's been our target is 2,600 kids, and which is roughly 200 kids a grade level, and that's what we've tried to stay with.
We didn't have some of those classes over the, I mean, when you were in school, there were no, how many AP classes were there? I think there were.
We had quite a few AP
classes,
actually.
Well, there was one at the.
One of the AP teachers is sitting right over there.
Yeah. But,
was,
no,
right?
No, we did not have anything nearly
yeah.
what we have now.
Well,
we did not have any of
and that. That's why I'm saying the ideal way of doing it is not just to drop enrollment, but I think that we have to figure out, I understand there's no magic formula to do this, but we need to, as a board and as a community, and that's why I've been recommending we need to work with the city and reach out to them any way we can, is that we need to get our enrollment coming up through growth. That is the true solution to the problem, not just letting this come down, but I think we need to get it going the other direction. And it's going to take a decade or more. It's not going to happen overnight. I'm aware of that. But I think that we need to start looking at that. You know, that's the key. And I agree with what you're saying, Cindy, on the classes. I get that. But on the flip side, you know, we had a parent in our meeting this morning, and she said, you know, but basically that open enrollment can do the other effect that, you know, at some point she alluded to that, you know, parents might want to start leaving Norton because if open enrollment keeps growing at the rate it's growing, it could also hurt the other direction. That was a comment she made, and I'm just saying it could. I don't know.
Well, it's just all factors that
yeah.
you really can't put in. But, you know, I think our district does do a good job, though, because I know when it comes to open enrollment, you know, certain classes are closed. I mean, you know, certain grade levels are closed because they're just too, you know.
Juniors. The juniors are closed, I know for sure, yeah.
Well, and we do close based, because we're not going to put ourselves in situations where it costs us new staff. That's what Stephanie's accurate, 2,600, 200 a class is the target, and we try to get there. Because I think that, and I provided the board with information a month or two ago regarding that. I think that's the most efficient operation for the district.
And that filled classrooms. Now we'll have a new structure. It might have a different number of classrooms to look at filling or not filling.
Do we know how many kids we lose to private schools?
No. They don't, you know, because they don't have to basically tell us anything. They're, the ones that we would know about are the ones that come and tell us that they want their money for not being transported. Other than that, they don't really have to tell us where they're at. I shouldn't say that they don't have to tell us. There's just not a report that gives us that. We know how many go to community schools. We know how many are open-rolled elsewhere because that funding flows through us. There's no funding that goes along with them to private schools, right?
First step as opposed to building new houses is keeping the kids here that live here.
Well, and I know that I have brought this up on a couple of times, that I would like to see us send a survey out to families who have pulled their students out to find out why they are leaving. I think it's worthwhile information to gather so that if there is something specific to our district, that we can work on changing, making it better.
I totally agree.
Whether it's academics, sports, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea.
Matt, to answer the question on our levy thing, I mean, not knowing private schools, but other charter and community, $340,000 a year. Gone.
Other public
That's just charter community, yeah.
We have about 100 students that go out that open enroll elsewhere. That's not counting the charter school kids. The charter school kids, I don't have that with me. I want to say, I was going to say 40, but I'm not sure on that number.
Somewhere around 100, 150 kids that either go to charter or open enroll in other public schools.
Pretty right. Sad, isn't it?
Yeah. All right, that's the end of board business. Superintendent's reports.
I have nothing to do.
He's saying the Indians are on.
Yeah. All right. Anybody have anything else?
Not that there has any.
All right. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Call the roll, please.
Mr. Knight,
yes.
Mr. Sams,
yes.
Mr. Yule, Mrs. Webb, and Mrs. Bennett.
Thank you for coming.
Fifth inning, 2-1.